Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. 12 o'clock hour. Jay Binkley and Stephen Serta. You know what time for? Time for energy, my friend. Something I like to do, and that's indulge in energy. Per Gabe DeArmond, speaking of Eli Drinkwitz, you bring his name up, the next coach at the University of Missouri. Looks like about $4 million for Eli. Missouri out there spending cash. Again, the whole staff is like $4.9 million for Missouri last year. Dooley was taking about $925,000 of that. Barry Odom got that contract extension last year, making $3.05 million. So Eli getting the money. Missouri going young. 36-year-old head coach of Appalachian State. Goes 12-1 this year. Missouri looking for that next guy. Looking for that bump. I think Kansas State hit a home run with Chris Klieman. But again, Chris Klieman had won at Kansas State. He has four national titles at 1AA. Proven he can win. And I think a lot of people were sleeping on Chris Klieman. I don't care what level you're at. You're at 1AA. I mean, game day's been up there. North Dakota State, they became a machine. He was there for three other national titles. One as an assistant coach. Two as defensive coordinator with Craig Bull. You know, he knew how to win. He had that acumen, winning. Klieman was doing that, knew how to recruit the Kansas City area, which is imperative. But Missouri going to Drinkwitz. He spent a lot of time with Gus Malzahn, both at Springdale, Arkansas, Arkansas State. Brian Harsin, he learned from him as well. So two great minds in college football. And Gus Malzahn, Brian Harsin was with him at Arkansas State before Harsin goes on in successful Boise State. So he had that going for him. North Carolina State for a while as offensive coordinator, 12-1 with Appalachian State, Sun Belt champions. They're going that direction. Good offensive mind. None of that productive offensive mind. Missouri's been able to play defense. They've proven with an offensive mind like Gary Pinkel still able to win. Not that Gary Pinkel put a lot of NFL players in the draft. You know, they've proven they could do it. Missouri's on the right side of the SEC in that East. You don't have to worry about Bama. Well, you still play them every once in a while in LSU, but you don't have to worry about them in the SEC East. That's Georgia, but you got to worry about that team. Always Georgia in the way they recruit and play. They've been to, what, three SEC title games in a row. Got to worry about Florida and what they're doing. Florida's different, though, than when Urban Meyer was there. Just not the machine. They're still looking for that right quarterback. You know, Felipe Franks, not the answer. And then Kyle Trask, not the answer for Florida either. You know, Kyle Trask had never even started a game until he got to Florida because he's behind Derek King. The guy that's down at Houston, he was behind him in high school. But this is good, and we'll talk to Carrington Harrison. He'll be in here around 1 o'clock about this hire. And I've seen nothing but praise from Missouri guys. There's a lot of them wondering, hey, what's going on here? You know, we want a Brian Harsin. You know, it's one at a different level. Appalachian State beat two D1 teams this year, or Power 5 teams this year, excuse me, because they are D1. Beat South Carolina this year in the SEC, but Appalachian State going a different direction. I like the thought of it, the foresight of it. I'm glad that Missouri did this. I think it's a good hire for the University of Missouri. But regardless, we'll talk at 1 o'clock with Carrington Harrison on that. Coming up at 12:30, our defensive guru, Craig Stout, defensive film analyst from arrowheadpride.com. But the genesis of the day is kind of how the national narrative has switched. We saw people starting to understand this defense, how good this defense was at a different time. And again, the directive for this team was set before the season began. The Chiefs do a show called The Franchise. It's on every other week. It's really good stuff. It's like Hard Knocks light. But they go in, they do a great job with the show. And they caught Clark Hunt. He was talking to the team. Very simple what this directive is for this team.
In terms of our goals, it's pretty simple. It starts with winning the AFC Championship. We were inches from getting that done last year. First time we'd hosted the AFC Championship game at Arrowhead Stadium. And those of you who are on the team know how that turned out. But this team can get back there. And when we do, we're going to win that trophy. That trophy has my dad's name on it, something that's very important to the organization. Once we do that, then we're going to go to Miami, and we're going to win the Lombardi Trophy. And anything less is not going to be a success.
So there's Clark Hunt right there. I mean, the directive was set right there. Not a success. Some people, and I'd love your opinion, text line 69306, is success just going to the Super Bowl? I believe Serta told me that he'd be okay with that. He'd consider that a success, taking steps. Again, it's taking steps. You know, you took a step last year. You know, they had kryptonite for the Chiefs, beating the Colts in the playoffs, then going to the AFC title game. Taking a step would, you know, logically be going to the Super Bowl, taking that extra step. But me, I'm looking, you got to win the whole thing. I mean, you've got Patrick Mahomes. You've got a defense playing much better than you had last year. Last year with this defense, the Chiefs are in the Super Bowl. We've already had a parade. If the Chiefs had this defense last year, and again, Spags was just out there. You know, you could have brought him in. But this defense is good enough right now. If they had this defense last year, Chiefs are Super Bowl champions. But depends on exactly what you want. You know, this is what we wanted. It was about beating the New England Patriots and flipping that script nationally. People are now nationally talking about this Chiefs defense. They started to a little bit before, but it was always, yeah, but with the Chiefs defense. Whenever somebody talked about this team, it was, yeah, they have Mahomes, but. And that was the defense. And then all of a sudden, people are starting to take notice. That's what happens when you're on Monday Night Football in Mexico City. That's what happens when you're playing the New England Patriots. I haven't seen the numbers yet, Stephen. I'm still looking for them. I haven't seen the numbers on yesterday's game. I would have to imagine these numbers are through the roof. New England, end of the game, Tom Brady, Pat Mahomes. I mean, it had to been through the roof. Have you seen them?
No.
I'm looking. I'm looking to see what CBS did. I know that that game against the Broncos was ridiculous compared to the game last year. But when they played the Broncos on Thursday night, the year before they had played the Cardinals, so obviously the numbers were up. But the national narrative's flipped. Just like Peter Schrager, Mrs. National as you get, Good Morning Football. And I get it, he likes the Chiefs. And he talks good things, but he's not talking Mahomes here. He's talking about the defense on Good Morning Football.
Now, last year when these teams played, the Chiefs' defense couldn't stop anything. Remember the playoff game? They just couldn't get that final stop. Yeah. And whether D4 was offsides or not, they gave up all those points. So what they do this offseason, they completely scrapped their defense. They fired Bob Sutton, the defensive coordinator. They hired Spags. And they have all these new – there are 8 new defensive starters on defense. 8. That is to every team out there whose roster is just completely stagnant and says, well, that's what we got. Frank Clark did an amazing thing yesterday. Frank Clark was sick all week. He was in the hospital at one point. He had a stomach virus. He lost 12 pounds since Monday. Yeah. Has IVs throughout the game. Goes out there, gets the sack, makes the play. I give credit to Brett Veach, Brant Tillis, that entire front office, because it's one thing to say, oh, we got to the AFC Championship game. Let's do it again. No, it's nothing to say. Let's get above that. Let's get better. 8 new defensive starters, rookies, veterans, Frank Clark, Honey Badger. It's a completely different defense, and they were the ones who won that game last night.
They have. Glad you took notice. I can't wait to see what some of the other talking heads are saying about the Chiefs. You know, we all like that. We all like when NFL Network or ESPN talks about your team. Kansas City's always like that. You like the Royals and they show their highlights. You get mad when they wouldn't show their highlights in 14 and 15, spent the time on the Royals like you thought they deserved. We like that. We like when people are talking about the Chiefs. Tony Dungy on Football Night in America loved what they did today. Although, I don't know really what to think about this, but even Tony Dungy took notice, Mr. Defensive Guru.
I loved what they did today. I've been on their defense the last 3 or 4 weeks. They're not going to win if this defense doesn't pick it up. But today, they made the big plays when they needed them. Hats off to the D.
And the one thing about it is, it's not just been today. The game was yesterday. It's not just been yesterday. You know, they won the game against the Chargers. Phillip Rivers, that some people already put in the Hall of Fame. I thought for a while Phillip Rivers was the best quarterback not to have won a ring, that's still playing. But they've shown this before. Yes, they took step back for a while. The last 5 minutes against Green Bay, step back. The game against the Vikings, holding the running game to just 71 yards with Dalvin, That was good. Stephon Diggs, just one catch in that game. That was good. He'd been averaging at least seven catches for 140 yards the three previous games. Going against the NFC Offensive Player of the Month in Kirk Cousins, that was a step forward. But then against the Titans, it was a step back for the Kansas City Chiefs. But no, they won the game against the Chargers. Phillip Rivers had an opportunity at the end of the game. A couple punts and a couple interceptions, not there. He resorted to just throwing the football up for grabs, trying to high point it for his receivers to come back to, and the Chiefs weren't having it. But that's the thing about the Chiefs. I think the national narrative does flip with that win. Now, of course, Andy Reid does have his press conference this afternoon. We'll bring you what he's saying about Pat Mahomes. Don't forget Pat Mahomes, that hurt hand. The x-ray looks good. And I think it's positive going forward. Here was Rap Sheedy and Rappaport on Mahomes earlier.
While another injury, somewhat concerning, Patrick Mahomes has a right hand injury. He actually got x-rays after the game. Sounded like those were negative, but he's going to have more tests today just to make sure there's no significant damage on that hand. You're seeing him hold it right there. He kind of fell on it awkwardly. This is something where there is optimism that he's going to be able to play next week. That is what the Chiefs think right now. But no one is absolutely sure until they get the results of these tests today.
Should the Chiefs try to wrap things up? Maybe give Mahomes a day off last game of the season? Would that be the best thing for him to get that built-in bye? Would you trust Matty Ice, Matty Moore, to go in and play a game for Mahomes? I mean, when he was holding his hand, I was like, oh, no, here we go again. Patriots, like, seven, eight plays were hitting Mahomes. Mahomes was getting drilled there for a while.
Yeah, but, I mean, if he could grip the ball and he could throw it, then he's perfectly fine. Like, you know, Drew Brees tore ligaments in his hand and literally couldn't grasp a football. And that's why he missed half the season. Like, it sounds like it's not that big of a deal. It sounds like it's just a bruised hand. He'll be fine.
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine, too. And he's tough, too. He wasn't going to come out of that game. Said he wasn't going to come out of the game. Here's how Mahomes hurt his hand in that game against the Patriots.
I just kind of hit the ground weird when I was kind of throwing that ball away and got hit. Got threw it away and got tackled right as I threw it away. And I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know for sure. And I tried to fire that next pass, and it didn't look too pretty. So I kind of just let the trainers look at it. They gave me the good to go. And so I went out there, battled, figured out ways to throw the ball across the middle and maybe not shoot those long shots that I usually throw, but enough to get them back and still score touchdowns.
Is there ever consideration you might come out of the game?
No, never. For me, I'm playing until they take me out.
He's playing until they take him out.
It doesn't feel great right now, but it's something that you play with. In this sport, you're going to get hurt. You're going to bang something. And so for me, it's about going out there and competing and relying on my teammates to help me out whenever I'm not feeling maybe 100%.
In this sport, you are going to get hurt. He's right. It's what happens. But the tough guys like Manning, like Brady, like Rodgers, they play through it like Brett Favre. I mean, that dude was tough as nails. You know, he'd get drilled. He'd still play. Mahomes is cut from the same cloth. Not only that, Mahomes talked about this team just getting better as a team after the game.
This team is building every single week. The defense is getting better. The offense is still rolling and doing good things. We're still getting better. And it's part of the process. It's day by day. Obviously, we wanted to get this step. We wanted to win this game, win the AFC West. But we're still going. And that's how we're going to keep rolling throughout the rest of this season into the playoffs.
I like the minimization of winning the AFC West. I mean, yeah, they got the hats. They got the shirts yesterday. You know, the West is not enough. And I get it. This is what the NFL's doing. Like the Saints trotted out, the South is not enough. But for the Chiefs, that's real, man. No one cares about winning the AFC West again. I mean, it's four straight. We're getting accustomed to it. The Chiefs win the division. They are the best team in this division. And the division should be put on notice. They're not going anywhere with Pat Mahomes, the quarterback. They're just not. You know, with Mahomes and Reed, Reed's been signed, I think, through 2021. Signed that extension the day that Dorsey was let go that summer day. I mean, I think he'll sign another one. I think Chiefs are going to keep Reed as long as he wants to coach, and they should. He's earned that right to still be the coach. He's constantly making changes. I think he's got to learn to put that nail in the coffin at times, keep the foot on the gas, don't let up on it, don't let the other team come back. But, man, his ultimate trust right now in the defense, which he's had, he had it against the Packers, but they let him down. He's had that ultimate trust in defense going forward. To me, I like it because they're more of a team game. You know, football is a team game. It's not about one guy. And it's about the defense stepping up. And I couldn't be more thrilled that we saw that performance. This was the game. The game. And we said it last week. What happens in this game? It'll flip the narrative on the Chiefs. Like, if the Chiefs would have lost to New England, it'd be like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. And I saw some of those texts, you know, from the text line or whatever, when the Chiefs fell down early in that game. Oh, boy, here we come again. The Patriots coming alive. They're running trick plays. That's the thing. They had to run trick plays to fool the Chiefs' defense, which shows where the Chiefs' defense is when you resort to those kind of plays. But they resorted to that, but yet the Chiefs' defense just kept getting stronger. And that second quarter was unbelievable. We've seen the second quarter. The Chiefs are the best team in the NFL in the second quarter. They set the tempo. They set the tempo against the Raiders, remember, when they fell down 10-0 and they scored 28 points in that second quarter, the best second quarter I've seen. And you can make an argument that the 17 against New England, that they've never given up in the second quarter like the Chiefs did since they've been in Gillette. I think they did at Foxborough, but they never did it at Gillette in the second quarter, that many points. They shell-shocked the Patriots. They're like, what's going on? I thought the Chiefs were in a position there to maybe have a rout. And I thought that this game was going to get out of hand. And I think it could have if they didn't rely on Bucker. I would have gone for the first down several times, especially when they're at the 30-yard line and you're kicking field goals. I would have considered that. That's not the direction they went. Hats off to Harrison Bucker. The guy's been nails. Especially under 50 yards. The guy's got the longest streak in the NFL with field goals made under 50 yards. He's become a real weapon for the Kansas City Chiefs. But I would limit that. Try to get in the end zone more. Andy Reid, I thought, was creative with that play with Travis Kelce, you know, running at zone read, getting in the end zone, showing his athletic ability. Kelce's got 11 yards to go, and he's the first tight end in history to have 1,000 yards in four straight years. Love that. Love Spagnuolo coming into Kansas City. And when Clark Hunt says that's our directive, this is how you get that directive. You know, the Patriots, they've got to really be concerned because they've lost to the best teams in the AFC. Then they still got to prove they can beat Buffalo, which they win 16-10 earlier against Buffalo, but Matt Barkley had to play. But you've lost to the Ravens. They have. They've lost to the Texans. Now they've lost to the Chiefs. And they're sitting around here complaining, thinking Brady's done, and the Chiefs essentially broke them. But the Chiefs, bigger eye on the prize, and the prize is the Super Bowl. Guy stepped up like Frank Clark. I feel that the momentum has swung with him, with the fan base. It's always tough to live up to those contracts. And I think he just fell in line like a lot of athletes have in this town when they get that big money, that pressure on their shoulders of delivering every single day. But Frank Clark is manned up now. That was manning up. When you're in the hospital and you lose 10 to 12 pounds, whatever it was, it's been reported as 10, some have 12. It's ridiculous. It takes away a lot of your oomph when you're sitting there losing that kind of weight. Makes you lighter, but it takes away your strength. But he manned up in that game. He gets a sack. They get the Brady three times. Patriots are 25th in the NFL at giving up the sack. That was a positive sign for the Chiefs. Yes, the officiating did help at times. But you know what? It hurt at times, too. Mahomes didn't get the calls that Brady normally would have got it. When Winovich put his body on him, or when he gets thrown outside and hits the ice chest. You know, that stuff Brady's drawing a flag on every time. Poorly officiated game. We could sit there and look at that, cry about that all we want. Rex Ryan said it perfectly this morning on Get Up on ESPN.
Why don't we just change the whole rules because New England got messed up? I'm sorry, but give me a break. Cry me a river. Man, New England's never had a break. Oh, please, give me a break. I mean, we're not changing the rules or anything else. Yeah, was there some mistakes? Absolutely, and I loved it for one.
I did too. Break the will of New England Patriots. As Serta knows, I sat there and listened to the post game for WEI. I loved hearing the meltdowns. I loved hearing the complaining from people about the roster construction, which is ridiculous considering the Patriots have been to 9 Super Bowls in the last 20 years to criticize roster construction. Because as they said, well, let's make Belichick the best coach if he can go out and win with a bunch of ragtags like he's normally done.
By the way, Andy Reid did just confirm on his conference call that Patrick Mahomes' hand is fine. He said it's bruised up pretty good, but there's no break, so he should be good.
It's what you wanted to hear, wasn't it? The hand is fine. He's playing this week against the Broncos. Hopefully they can give him a little time off. Again, I would like to see the Chiefs roll the Broncos and be able to take him out in the second half. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you like to see a nice cushion against the Broncos? The way they played last time against them? If I'm Broncos, 9 sacks. You know the Chiefs are coming. Because that flipped the whole narrative. The Chiefs were not getting sacks. But then all of a sudden, since then, it started to become Sack City again with the Chiefs doing it a variety of different ways.
Yeah, I mean, they should dominate this game. I know Drew Lock has played 2 really good games now as a rookie starting quarterback, especially starting late in this season. But I don't expect him to be able to do that against this team. Like, the Texans are that type of team that suffers that type of letdown. I don't believe that the Chiefs are.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. But this is the best news we could have heard from Andy Reid, isn't it? Because what's worse is if Rick Burkholder would have talked first, there's a break. If there was a break in that hand, that derails the season. That derails the season going forward. Listen, I like what Matt Moore did. Could you win some games with Matt Moore in this defense playing the way it is? Sure. Can you go to the Super Bowl with Matt Moore in the way this defense is playing? No. You need Patrick Mahomes. The bruised hand, he's playing. How about, did you see his girlfriend tweeting last night? How security at Gillette had to move her to a different place? A safe spot? Because the Patriots fans, and I've been to games there, they're ruthless, man. They are ruthless, even to their own. They were fighting each other. They boo when they punt. Because I was there that first year of Brady, and they were booing, man. They boo everything. If they punt, they boo. It's hilarious. Now, I went neutral because I went to one game where they're just playing the Chargers or whatever. Because I used to have family out there, which this is another reason I'm glad the Chiefs beat the Patriots. It's a selfish reason, I know. But I'd gone out there, saw him play. I saw the Chiefs play out there one time in the old stadium in Foxborough on Monday night when Gonzalez and the rest of the team was furious at the end of the game they didn't beat him. Patriots have been that thorn. They're the ones getting talked about. There, I knew nationally they'd be talked about again today. Is Brady done? Does he have anything left? Again, they've thrown so much dirt on that guy. He showed it, too, when he was on that scramble. He gets up, and Brady showed excitement that I've never seen from him. This game mattered to him. Like, you were getting the best of Tom Brady. And then at the end of the game, he's feeling himself, couldn't get the job done. Goes to his guy, Julian Edelman. Goes to his guy, and he doesn't get it done because there's Bashaud Breeland. Making the play of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Here we go. This is the game. Up the middle, the pass to the end zone. Knocked down by Breeland. Incomplete. Denying Edelman. Denying the Patriots. They get to the right play. All-out pressure. Spagnuolo game on the line. Brady was ready for it. Blocked it up and got it to his best player. Edelman one-on-one. The throw's there. And Breeland with the play of the day right there with his finger coming right over the top.
Tony Romo, Jim Nantz, CBS. Tony Romo is so bad when they say play of the year. So bad that he wants to say it, but he's very calculated in what he says. He could have said the best play of the year for the Chiefs. But I think he's cognitively thinking, I haven't seen every play the Chiefs have made. I don't know if I want to throw this out there. He would have been safe doing it, though. He'd have been safe saying that because that was the play of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs. No doubt about it. What Breeland did there. And I know he's burnt in that game, but he had a great tackle, had a great pick, and then, of course, he made the play of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs. It was perfect. You know, I talked to Desmond Moses yesterday out at Winning Streaks, and he talked about simplification. Like, I think Sutton had it too difficult. He played for Sutton, you know, too difficult. You're always thinking about what you're doing, where your alignment is. And I brought up Pete Carroll, that book that he wrote, talking about if you can just concentrate on what you're doing and not worrying about what other people are doing, you just play football. We've heard in basketball all the time, the plays and everything. Just let them play. That's what guys want to do, the simplification of it. And we've heard Hitchens talk about this, simplification. So the Badger's not worried about what everybody else is doing. He's concentrating on himself. You know, Breeland's out there concentrating on himself. It's big. It's huge for this team, and it's starting to show. We talked about this Chiefs defense. Is something to believe in at this point or not? Have they turned that corner? We'll talk to Craig Stout, defensive film analyst, Arrowhead Pride, next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Steven Serta. Cowboys signed Kai Forbath, who was cut earlier by the Patriots. You talk about woes, man. Oh, by the way, that's another Brett Veach move, Harrison Butker. Wasn't it? I think it was. Again, I think the guy's been good. For Pete Sweeney, arrowheadpride.com, of course, Pete, on the show a lot. It's okay. It's bruised up pretty good. There's no breaking, as Steven Serta had reported. Andy Reid talking about Mahomes. I think probably the most encouraging news that we could expect for today. It's been hand gate with Patrick Mahomes. You know, players looking for that hand. What's going on? That's the thing about that. We'll see what happens. I just know that they broke the spirit of the New England Patriots. We'll bring in that press conference from Andy Reid in just a little bit. Again, we'll talk to Carrington Harrison, 1 o'clock, about the Missouri coaching hire. Looking forward to that. And we'll talk to Craig Stout from Arrowhead Pride soon here as well. And get his thoughts on this defense, the direction they're going forward. Craig watches every single play, charts every single play of the Kansas City Chiefs, and likes to talk about it on Arrowhead Pride and the show as well. Usually I have a night or here, and we'll talk to Craig about this defense and what they've done. Because, again, you heard the stats from Bill Barnwell. 41.5% of the time they provided pressure to Tom Brady. The previous high by another team was 30.8% on Tom Brady. They changed the narrative. Bill Barnwell had this in a great column today. He says, while Spagnuolo's famous game plan in the Super Bowl against Brady 12 years ago was to rush 4 and drop 7 into coverage, Chiefs went with a totally different game plan for stretches on Sunday. They blitzed on 43.9% of the pass dropbacks. Think about that. They came with the house, the kitchen sink. 43.9% of pass drawbacks or dropbacks got pressure on Brady 41.5% of the time. Highest pressure rate any team has done against Tom Brady this year. No other team that had topped 30.8% against Tom Brady. That was clearly the directive of the Kansas City Chiefs. What Steve Spagnuolo wanted to do against Brady, it is most obvious. Put pressure on Brady and see what happens. And I think to some extent, Belichick's looking at this game thinking they flipped the script. He went down 10 minutes longer time of possession against the Texans, didn't get the win. That had to have been the hit to him. And then, of course, Andy Reid takes the ball 9 more minutes than the Patriots in their own house when the Chiefs weren't even running that effectively in that game. Patriots didn't run well in this game either. The running game was pretty much non-existent in this game from both teams. But this was the game. This is what the Chiefs had to do in beating the New England Patriots. This was the circler. I love the fact they beat the Ravens earlier this year, but we didn't know how good the Ravens team was going to be. And I think we look back at that game and think, man, wow, if this game would have been later in the season against the Baltimore Ravens, what would we have thought about, or how would we approach that game? Wink Martindale's a great defensive coordinator, and John Harbaugh is the most analytical guy in football. So it's interesting what they did. I told you at WEI, they're melting down. Melting down about this team. The Chiefs broke them, just like they did the Broncos. They were melting down on that game as well. If you want to go listen to it, WEI, it's our sister station in Boston. They take all the phone calls. Told you I had played Steve's call earlier, this word about roster construction. That's where they're at now. People were calling in the postgame. Where they were calling in and complaining about Tom Brady and him going forward, but they also complained about a myriad of different things, including Jake.
Holiday season. Here's Jake in Boston. Hello, Jake.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, two thoughts. None of them about officiating. Number one, I am viscerally angry about how the Patriots as an organization have embraced the boogeyman concept. It's not just Van Noy selling sweatshirts. It's Gerard Mayo commenting on Instagram posts. It's football operations people walking around in those sweatshirts. It is the fact that they showed a make way for boogeyman graphic as the game started today, and they were even playing boogeyman music as that team leaves the field. This all started being the likes of Falk and Matt Barkley. Fake players, fake quarterbacks. First of all, for a great defense like the 2000 Ravens, 16 points, they win the game. That team was 2-3 during the stretch in October 2000 with their offense didn't score a single touchdown. And this team has beaten one real playoff team. They're 2-3 against winning teams. Secondly, I mean, this is, first of all, going back to that.
No, your first point, Jake, I agree with Jake. The whole idea of the boogeyman thing.
I like the boogeyman.
Yeah, I don't. And why? I'll tell you why. This is a team that has prided itself over the years on coming out as a complete unit, not having guys individually introduced. All right? They have prided themselves on not labeling themselves with any type.
What do you want to call the defense? Remember?
Yes, it's stupid.
When they came out.
Yeah, when they were beating Peyton Manning 20-3 in a playoff game and they didn't want that. This is stuff they're embracing. This is what, to Glenn's point, this is exactly what the other teams did. This wasn't what the Patriots did.
Yeah, we used to rip the other teams for doing this, right? He's right.
Didn't give himself.
You wait until you
The Jets gave him the name.
No, but you wait until you accomplish something, okay? And accomplishing something is at the end of the season, you can call yourself, if you are the greatest defense of all time or the greatest defense in the NFL.
Well, they're not claiming
that. You can call
that.
Yourself
the,
that.
The Ghostman.
Okay, the boogeyman's kind of stupid.
The boogeyman.
Okay, all right.
It's not a big
second
deal.
Point.
I mean, they went out there pretty well tonight. They held them to 24 points, which is without much help from the offense. Not a bad day.
23.
You choked your offense at halftime in that game when you couldn't. That's what a team. That's what a championship defense doesn't do. That you choke your defense at halftime. Second point. This is a game that Antonio Brown wins for you. He's sitting at home because your owner has a massive ego. He's apologized multiple times for what he did. Kraft put out a single statement. When do I get the Channel 7 interview between Byron Barnett and Bob Kraft on what happened in Florida? When do I get Bob Kraft to the tough questions? Instead, I get Bob Kraft with Summer Redstone and Little Murdoch.
Why are you so angry?
The most powerful people in the media world.
Brown would have made the difference in this offense.
He would have.
No question.
I love it. The boogeyman complained about this team, not a championship defense. The Patriots' defense was good. The defense the Chiefs played for New England was good. Belichick's a smart guy. Like, don't discount what the Patriots did on defense. Let's not get there. Joining us now, though, on the hotline, defensive film analyst at Barley Hop on Twitter, one of the best in the business, Craig Stout, arrowheadpride.com. We're talking defense. What's up, Craig?
Hey, what's up, Bink? How are we doing today?
It's going good, my friend. It keeps getting better for you. Once again, we can look at this game and say the defense won the game. We're starting to get repetitive here.
Yes, we absolutely are. And not only are we getting repetitive, we're finding new ways to win on defense. It's not just the same hallmarks that are getting forward. Last week, the defensive line wasn't particularly good. This week against the Patriots, they were phenomenal. This team is figuring it out. They are listening to Spagnuolo. They're growing as a group. And we're seeing the fruits of their labor so far.
No, they really are. What do you think of Breland? Was that not the play of the year for the Chiefs on Edelman there at the end of the game?
Absolutely, that was the play of the year for the Chiefs right there. Breland had a couple rocky performances there in a row after he'd had his kid. You know, I understand that. You know, being a father myself, you have some late nights. Maybe you're not quite switched in. That was his best performance since the beginning of the year. And what a play to come up there. Now, Frank Clark forces that ball to float a little bit, but just to be able not to have pass interference on that play, reach through, get a hand on the ball, phenomenal play by a guy that, you know, was on a one-year deal trying to make some money here.
Yeah, you know, he was burnt on a play, but he made a great tackle, great hit in the game, made the interception, made the play of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I love the confidence they're displaying. You know, Chris Jones not happy they gave up 16 points on the road. I love that attitude. You know, we're playing for ourselves now. You know, we don't need Mahomes to win all the games. Derek Nnadi said something similar in that Chargers game. Because we've seen this defense play well, Craig. We've talked about it each week. And we've seen them play bad as well, like against the Tennessee Titans. But is there a time or place where you can put your finger on it and say, that's when the light switch was turned? Because I think it was at halftime of the Chargers game.
I do think that that's when it really kind of all came together a little bit, that you got to see that this defense realized maybe Mahomes needed a little more help than they were giving him. We saw against the Titans there that was Patrick Mahomes' first game back, and it was sloppy. You know, against the Vikings the week before, it looked phenomenal. It looked like a group that was playing together. It seemed like they let their guard down a little bit against the Titans. But, yes, that Chargers game in the second half there, being able to flip that switch, turn it on, and close out the game. We saw an entire game against the Raiders that they played phenomenal, and another entire game where they basically played phenomenal against the Patriots outside of a couple gimmicky, little trick plays and some defensive pass interferences that they definitely need to clean up. But just an overall fantastic performance. It is like they realize they can shoulder this load. And yeah, Chris Jones' comments after the game really spoke to that as well.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, too, and, you know, I was talking to Billy Bob Moss about this, and I've been talking about this on the show earlier. When you result to trick plays, that's the ultimate respect to a defense, saying we can't beat you the normal way. We'll result to trick plays and do that. I mean, that's how I've always viewed trick plays.
Yeah, well, especially when you're using them on the very first drive. Mm-hmm. You've had the drive extended by two pass interference calls on third down because you couldn't get anything going on first and second down. Yes, that's absolutely what that screamed to me. I honestly smirked a little bit. Now, Bashaud Breeland got sucked up by the run play there, but I honestly smirked a little bit when that went through. I was thinking, boy, if they can't get this figured out, the Patriots, if they can't get this figured out on first and second down, they have already resulted to playing deep into their playbook. That's not a good look for them. That's going to be a long day, and it was.
What do you make of these numbers? Bill Barnwell from ESPN put these numbers out earlier. Chiefs blitzing 43.9% of pass drawbacks. Got pressure on Brady 41.5% of the time. The highest previously against Tom Brady this year was 30.8%. That's a significant that is saying we're blitzing. I don't care what we're doing, but that is a tremendously higher percentage than what's been on him this year, what Spags did.
Absolutely. And boy, I'll tell you what, this is the reason why you brought Steve Spagnuolo in. Bob Sutton couldn't have done that performance yesterday. That would not have happened at all. Steve Spagnuolo came in with a great defensive game plan. Props to him for bringing those delayed blitzers, really testing the interior of that offensive line that was a little bit weaker. And so I kind of had to keep shifting help inside. Then you got to see Okafor and Clark get a few more one-on-one matchups that they took advantage of. And really, really big credit to the secondary. They put a lot of stress on those guys. There was a lot of 5-, 6-, 7-man even blitzes. Bring in the house against Tom Brady. They definitely had to be tight in coverage because we've seen what Tom Brady can do against the blitz. The secondary forced him to make some bad throws, forced him to have to hang on to the ball a little longer because of those, and the blitz was even more effective than it normally is. So just an all-around great performance, great game plan from Spagnuolo.
Would you make a Frank Clark in that performance, considering supposedly some people report he lost 10 pounds, 12 pounds, whatever. It's still significant that he lost that weight in a hospital. He tweets out the picture of Jordan, the flu game with Scottie Pippen. Just his performance in your mind, what he did, especially against Tom Brady, considering he was sick.
Monster. A monster performance. Frank Clark played around 45% of the snaps yesterday. He had a sack. He had two tackles for loss in the run game, and he had four pressures by my charting. I think that some have said three. I've got four on him. That is a phenomenal output for the amount of snaps that he was limited to because of that. That is a grown man stepping up and playing. This organization has had players that did not play through injuries, did not play through some, nagging sort of things that were going on with them, set themselves out, maybe half efforted it. We saw what Frank Clark was made out of yesterday. That's the kind of person he is right there, being able to step up, have that kind of performance, not letting up, when, by all accounts, he probably could have. It sounded like it was a really brutal week for him. But you know how much he wanted to be out there. We got to see how much he wanted to be out there. That's one of the leaders of the team. When you got your leaders of your team doing that right there, everybody else likes to step up around him, and everybody else raises their game a little bit more.
Does this defense have the swag that we thought it would?
Mm-hmm.
Coming in? I mean, they're talking the talk, and they're walking the walk.
Yes, absolutely. But you got to see it on every single one of those sacks that you saw. You got to see those guys chirping at Tom Brady. Tom thought that he was going to push back a little bit. Getting in Chris Jones' face a little bit.
Come on, Tom.
Oh, buddy. No, you don't want that. You don't want that smoke, Tom. So you got to see after every single one of those snaps, Chris Jones, Frank Clark are walking over to Tom to remind him why he's on the ground, to remind him that they're still coming. You know, as the rest of the team is celebrating, one or the other is up there all over Tom, yapping at him, reminding him that he's laying on the ground and that they're going to be coming all day long, and they did. And so you got to see that. That very last play of the game, Frank Clark beat Isaiah Wynn, but he was still probably a step and a half away from Tom Brady when he let that ball go, and he is trying, you know, a fadeaway jumper. Like, he wants no part of Frank Clark in his face, caused him to float that ball to Breland. That's because that pressure was coming all day. Those are those voices in his head, those footsteps behind him. That's what you want. So, yes, that swag is definitely there. That's only going to be positive going forward here.
Man, you got some swag too, Craig. You're throwing in there. You don't want that smoke. I like that, man. I use that once with a chugging deal. You know, you don't want that smoke. I'll out chug you. Tano Passanio, like, what do you? We're talking to Craig Stout, defensive film analyst, ArrowheadPride.com, who goes down to the Senior Bowl. This guy is all over the Chiefs defense, charts every play. Tano Passanio. It's taken a while because they had that red shirt on. This guy was dominant 1AA level. What have you seen from him overall? Do the Chiefs have a productive player? Can he be a future member of the Chiefs? Or is this a guy that eventually they're going to move on? Still got a contract, getting paid $1 million next year. Where do you sit with Passanio?
Boy, he's one of those guys that I think if this organization has seen the kind of growth in the run game specifically, to where they think that he can be a starting defensive end for them. Now, you remember in some previous weeks there that Chris Jones was a starting defensive end over Passanio, kind of switching positions there because Tano Passanio, not great against the run, but he has been a phenomenal pass rusher. He has just grown by leaps and bounds under Brendan Daly. They really got to use that Okafor, Clark, Jones, Tano passing, no four-man front, and Tano was just as effective as those other three guys that are much more lauded. They get all the credit for all this stuff. Tano passing, was in Brady's face all game long as well. I think if they believe that he can put on a little more bulk, figure himself out in the run game, he might be a guy that they try and extend on the cheap this offseason before he hits another year, because I do think that he is going to grow by leaps and bounds. Again, if you get another year with Brendan Daly, it's just going to get better. He's playing faster. He's playing smarter. He just needs a little more mass there on the edge to be able to set it harder and kind of, keep everything between the tackles.
Brendan Daly was one of the focal points. Guy did a great job with the Patriots defensive line. I mean, guy won 3 Super Bowl rings with them. Not only that, he took a defensive line and flipped it from a defensive pressure to a defensive sacks in the postseason. He obviously knows Bill Belichick well. Did you notice anything with that defensive line? Because there was a physicality, and that defensive line was doing some things. I mean, with some of the stunts they were doing, and that was a lot of that was Brendan Daly and what he thought would work against Bill Belichick. I thought that made a huge difference having him here.
I absolutely felt like that's a big difference. Mike Pinnell and Derek Nnadi were even getting in the backfield a little bit. They definitely saw some stuff on film, or maybe Brendan Daly had seen some stuff while he was in New England. They had some of the keys to gaining some of that interior pressure, to gaining some penetration there. We saw some runs that were just absolutely blown up yesterday because the interior defensive linemen were able to knife through and really kind of put it on some of these, the interior offensive linemen for the Patriots. I do think that Brendan Daly definitely helped with some of the pressure packages this week. I would be very curious, maybe we can get somebody to ask Bags and a presser, this week, if Daly helped with some of those pressure packages, because it did seem like they were very much targeting specific gaps, and they were, like you said, they were moving those guys up front a lot. They were running a lot of stunts, a lot of games up front. They were taking advantage of it by safety blitzes, corner blitzes, and linebacker blitzes. They were all very effective.
Yeah, we didn't see Colin Saunders as much in this game, just the 14 snaps, 22%. But that's a guy that you've seen progress for this year. And, they always talk about that rookie wall that you hit, and we're talking one double-A guy, you know, playing at the Senior Bowl helped this guy, I think, more than anybody. But, he's a guy that showed promise. He didn't get the chance to play as much in this game, but he's a guy going forward, and especially the way that Nadi's playing. I think the Chiefs really have something there with him and, of course, Chris Jones. But I like the future of this defensive line.
I definitely do as well. And it feels good to talk about those guys again after last week. I was a little worried. Now, Frank Clark had plenty to say before last week's game against Phillip Rivers. And while they weren't awful, they just weren't up to the level that I think we were expecting, especially with Okafor coming back. This is the game they needed. This is the game that front four needed, because they won up front all game long. If you see that continue against Denver, against Chicago, and against Los Angeles there at the end of the year, my goodness, they're going to be coming in with all kinds of momentum. They're going to feel like they've got this scheme down. They're going to feel like they can beat up on anybody, because, frankly, they can with that talent. They just need to click and get that momentum for the end of the year.
Drew Lock presents something interesting. Not a lot of game film, of course, on him in the NFL. He takes that step forward. Going to be playing back in his home city in Kansas City. I was shocked they put 38 points on the Texans. Shocked in that, but he played well. It'll be interesting seeing a quarterback making his first start at Arrowhead Stadium.
Oh, yeah. Especially, he's going to want to come out and play well. He's coming home. He wants for this to be a good performance. There's going to be a lot of expectations on him and everything like that. By all accounts, he's a kid that doesn't let that sort of stuff really get to him, but you got Steve Spagnuolo on the other side of the field. Spags has two games worth of tape on Lock now. It will be very, very interesting to see the types of pressures that he brings, the type of respect that he brings with the deep ball, because Drew Lock certainly has that in his arsenal. And, they're going to have to stop the run as well. So it is a sneaky, tough matchup. But I do think that Lock being there is going to have these guys a little bit more focused, because they're going to want to show up. New quarterback, you've got guys that need to show up, need to study film, need to really understand what they need to do on a game-to-game basis, and it's a divisional game. I just don't think that this is a letdown game for them because of all of those factors.
Final question for you, Craig Stout. The big question last week was the top four teams, Patriots, Ravens, Chiefs, Texans, the order of these teams. I don't know about you. It looks crystal clear to me. It's the Ravens, Chiefs, Patriots, then the Texans.
Oh, it absolutely is. I don't see anything else. I know that everybody wants to, hold back on writing off the Patriots. Patriots are still a good team, don't get me wrong. But the Chiefs and the Ravens are the class of the AFC right now. And, yeah, that loss to Denver is bad for Houston. Keep an eye in 2 weeks, Buffalo versus New England. That might be what decides who gets the two seed. If the New England Patriots drop that, the Chiefs can win out and get a first-round bye, something that we didn't think, after that Titans game was really even going to be feasible at any point. Now, all of a sudden, the Chiefs are kind of knocking on that door a little bit.
Oh, by the way, Craig, I had Levi Garrison's and Sons, the brewery up in Hamilton, Missouri, Friday night. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you, and I know you love looking for the hidden places for beer. Let me tell you something. They've got the market cornered on that dark beer. I mean, that's all they brought me because they knew that's what I like. The stouts, the porters, the ambers. It's a little hidden secret. Ooh. Just, if you're ever in St. Joe, Hamilton's not very far from it. But I get so many choices for you, man.
And not only that, but the Imperial. Choice, man.
You made a great Russian Imperial.
Yeah. I try.
Well, I got to try the Craig Stout blends again. You make anything right now, or?
No, not right now. Right now. We're full on football and draft right at the very moment.
Well, how'd the hops do this year?
They did all right. Got a small yield. Very small yield. Yeah. Maybe next year we'll have a lot. I want to have more than I know what to do with.
All right. Craig Stout. Craig Stout Hops, the best in the business. Craig Stout at Bartley Hop on Twitter, defensive film analyst, arrowheadpride.com, and an all-around good guy that has a Twitter handle at Bartley Hop because he makes beer as well, and he makes very good beer too. See you later, Craig.
See you later, Ben. Thanks.
There you go. Is there a better guy for me, Serta, than Craig Stout? I mean, look at his last name, Stout. It's a beer. At Bartley Hop, he's a beer and football guy.
I don't like stouts.
Oh, I do.
But I do like Craig Stout.
Yeah, we all like Craig Stout, but this time of year, I'm all about the darker beers. I know you're a beer guy. You have a pretty good palate when it comes to beer, but you don't like stout. You don't do different beers this time of year, like stouts and porters.
No, I'm more of a, I like wheats. I like IPAs. Not really a stout and porter guy.
I like IPAs. I mean, I'll drink them all year. In the summertime is when I really go crazy on the IPAs. But I'm a seasonal guy. Give me the dark blends. Again, I'm Winter Lager Sam Adams right now. The KC Beer Company is a great winter bock in Mother's Winter Grind.
I'll drink those occasionally, but it's not something. I'm not interested in buying a six-pack of stouts or porters that I'm going to just sit at home and drink.
Well, they're not like crushable. They're just sitting and enjoying them. I call them chocolate bar beers. If you can sit there and eat a frozen chocolate bar, which, by the way, take your chocolate and put it in the freezer, all of it. It is so much better. I learned this trick at my old barber. He used to put Snickers in the freezer. Have you had a frozen Snickers? In the South, they fry them.
Fried Snickers. Yeah, I've had a frozen
Snickers. It's the best. I mean, you just take them, the Swiss cake rolls, something like that, put them in the freezer. My kid thinks I'm nuts, and then she tried them. She's like, man, this is real good, Dad.
You know, it's really good?
What?
You know, those little oatmeal, like, cream sandwiches. Yeah. Put those in the fridge.
Oh, yeah.
And then eat them cold. Fantastic.
I think even chew in the freezer tastes good. I know it's kind of off the wall, but I like anything frozen.
I wouldn't know about that.
I like anything frozen. Anyway, well, speaking of actually, it has nothing to do with freezing. Well, because it's not Hugh Freeze. We'll talk to Carrington Harrison about the new hire, Drinkwitz, at the University of Missouri. Love the name. Talk about that. Plus, Andy Reid's press conference. All that next.
Middays, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.